This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
There was a case when they found in her storehouse, in the ant's pantry, 300 kur. 300 kur is an enormous amount of food, which she had gathered from the summer to the winter. Lefichach, therefore, Omar Shlomo lechel nemolo otzel, ra'ed rochel v'chaki. Therefore, Shlomo said, go to the ant, you lazy one, and learn her ways and become wise. Af atem, you too, hatkinu lachem mitzvahs min ha'ilam hazeh lo'ilam habo. Prepare for yourself mitzvahs from this world for the world to come. And what does it mean, see her ways and become wise? What in her ways are so wise? Rabbonin Amri, the Rabbonin said, Re'ed derech eretz sheyesh bo. See the derech eretz that an ant has. She berachas min hagezel, that she flees from theft. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, said Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, Maisei benemola achas, there was a case with a certain ant, Shehipilo chito achas, who dropped a grain. Vayukulon bois umirichis bo, and all the other ants came and they smelt that grain. Velo hoiso achas mehen litilis hoiso, not one ant picked it up. Bo hoiso shehoiso shelo, the ant whose grain it originally was came, vinatlo hoiso, and she took it. Reichochmo sheyesh bo, by the name. Another medrash, same story. It's actually mentioned that they made a mark on one of the ants. When the ant dropped its food, they actually dropped a dye on the ant and watched. They observed. Note how the Chachomim, how seriously they took all these things. When Shlomo HaMelech says, go to the ant and study it, the Chachomim got on their hands and knees and they studied ants. And they did experiments and they observed them. Re'ei Chochmo sheyesh bo, see the wisdom that she has. V'chol ha'shvach hazeh sheyesh bo. And all this wonderful character that she has, she did not learn from anybody. Nobody taught her how to behave. She has no judge and she has no policeman. If they steal, nothing's going to happen to her. She's not going to be locked up in jail if she steals. Atem, you, sheminisi lochem shriftim v'shritrim, for whom I have appointed judges and policemen. Al achas kama v'kama shetishmu lohem. How much more so are you obligated to listen to these shofti? Evi shoftim v'shoitrim titem lecho b'chol sh'orecho. That's the meaning of the instruction to appoint shoftim and shoitrim in all your cities. Now let's go through the medrash again. It's a very strange and peculiar medrash. Firstly, the pasuk itself. Lech el namolo otzil re'eder ochel v'chakein. Go to the ant, you lazy one, see its ways and become wise. Why doesn't Shlomo say see its ways and become azoris? It will solve your problems of atzlonus. Why does he say, you lazy one, go and watch the ant and you know what will happen to you? Not you'll cease to be lazy, you'll become wise. His problem isn't wisdom, his problem is laziness. What does it help him to become wise? And what is the wisdom? She hasn't got a policeman or a judge or a ruler, and yet she prepares her food in the summer. Explains the Medrash. The Medrash starts telling us she has this three-story house. She doesn't use the bottom story for storage, and she doesn't use the top story for storage. She uses only the middle story. What's that got to do with the Otzel and the Chochem? What wisdom can one learn from that? Or what does it help the Otzel? What does it help the lazy man to note that the ant stores her food in the middle floor? Then it goes on that she only needs 1.5 grains of food, and yet she works all her life. Why? maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam will keep her going longer. So she's a workaholic, that's all. What musa can one learn from this? And doesn't know how to relax. And what does it mean that the ant thinks maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam will give it longer life? And then what's the theft got to do with the otzel? If you'll say that the otzel has to learn how hard you must work, okay, one can understand it. But then it says, and see her ways and become wise. What are the ways? Sheberachas min hagezel. And the Medrash tells us the story of the experiment that Rabbi Shimon ben Chalasta reports with the ant who dropped her grain of food. What does it all mean? And in this Medrash there lies a very, very important yesod. A principle that lies at the bottom of all of our failures, and an understanding of which can motivate us to great levels of success. Let's take the first question in the pasuk itself. Lechel namola otzel. Does anybody have a Mishle nearby? Can you just get a Mishle? There might be one right here. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Go to the ant, you lazy one. See her ways and become wise. So we see a Yesod here already. The problem of the lazy person is lack of knowledge. There's something he doesn't know. If he would know something, if that gap in his knowledge would be filled, he would cease to be lazy. And that's a wonderful relief, that there is a solution to laziness. One just needs to know something. We have to establish what it is that one needs to know, and one sees that that's the shita of Shlomo HaMelech right through. This pasuk is in Perek Vov, but in Perek Kaf Dalet, where he also talks about the otzel, about the lazy person, he says, Al Sadei Ish Otzel Avarti, I passed by the field of a lazy man, the Al Kerem Odom Chasar Lev, and by the vineyard of a man lacking in intellect. Again, we see the equation of the Otzel and the man who's Chasar Lev. There's something he doesn't know, there's something he doesn't understand. And he goes on describing these fields, how they're full, overrun with weeds and thorns and so on. So the first principle is that there is knowledge that one has to learn. There's a fact that one has to know, there's certain input that one needs in order to counteract the effect of aslumus. And whatever that is that one needs to learn, one can learn from the ant. That piece of knowledge that is missing, one can gain from the ant. Why do we need the ant? Why can't we just learn it in a sefer? Why does it say somewhere in the Torah? So we're beginning to see what kind of knowledge it is. It's the kind of knowledge you've got to see. It's the kind of knowledge it doesn't help hearing about, because when you hear about it, you don't believe it. And that's why Mishle says, Chasar Lev, he calls the Otzel, he is a Chasar Lev. It's not just that he's lacking knowledge in a normal intellectual sense, but it's emotional knowledge. It's the kind of knowledge that you gain from experience. There's a piece of knowledge you need to know that something exists, and until you've seen it, you don't know it. There are such things. But until you've seen it, it's not possible to know. I had the wonderful opportunity recently of visiting the Victoria Falls. And there I understood this yesod. There are certain things in life you cannot appreciate unless you've seen. It cannot be described. No photograph can do it. No film can do it. No television can do it. The greatest artists and literates, nobody can possibly describe to a human being what it is. It's not shaykh. You have to see it. There is no other way. There are certain things in life that you cannot imagine, that you cannot understand without actually physically being exposed to them. And the wisdom that the ant has to teach is one of them. You have to watch the ant, you have to see it. Until you've seen it, it's not shayach, it's not possible to really understand this piece of knowledge. What is it that we have to learn from the ant? The first thing the Medrash tells us, Hanamola Azu Gimel Batim Yeshlo, this ant has three levels to its house. Ve'ilu Kineses Be'elyin Mipnei Hadulafuli Betachton Mipnei Atino Elo Baimtsoi. There's a hakdoma one needs to know. When one studies the ant, one needs a certain introduction. That's with a lot of knowledge. When one studies many things, one needs hakdomas, one needs an introduction. The hakdoma to the study of the ant, the introduction to the study of the ant, is the knowledge that she uses only the middle floor of her silo. That there's a floor underneath which remains empty, and there's a floor on top which remains empty. What is that? Why is that so important to know? The reason that she stores only in the middle is because that's where the food can best be stored. On the bottom and on the top, the moisture will eventually get to it and will cause the wheat to rot. So we see already that she's not just a workaholic. That she doesn't just work because she doesn't know how to stop. She's working to store. She has a purpose, because if she was working just for the sake of work, it wouldn't matter where she stored it. Who cares? She only needs 1.5 grains in any case. So in any event, she's achieving, she's earning far, far more than she can ever use. So let her put it wherever, the top floor, the bottom floor, what's the difference? No, she rather goes to the effort of building a 3-storied house, even though she only wants to use the middle story. The top and the bottom story are for insulation. There she needs dry air, which will keep the moisture away from the middle floor. So it's not just a workaholic. She wants this corn and this wheat, and she wants it to last for a long, long time. That raises big questions. Once we know that it's not just her instinct to work, but that there's something far more than that. She wants the corn. Now, that is a major question. For somebody who only lives 6 months, Ms. Rabbi Tanchuma asks, "B'chol chayeo eno elo chito mechzo," and her entire life only consumes 1.5 grains. The koneses is elu, and she stores this and preserves it, and that's why she uses only the middle floor. The lama he is okay. Now, what is it that motivates her? You can't just say it's instinct. Instinct would motivate her to collect and collect and to collect and to shove it in the first floor, middle floor, top floor. But the fact that she collects only for the middle floor shows that her instinct is to preserve the corn, not merely to collect the corn. Comes the question, what's she preserving it for? What does she want it for? Sha'amra answers, the Medrash Shema Yigzul Araya Kudosh Baruch Chaim Tiyeheli Muchen Lecha. In case the Ribbono Shel Olam should decree long life for me, and I should have it ready to eat. What does that mean? Firstly, it's very far-fetched. The chances of the Ribbono Shel Olam decreeing long life for her are very, very, it's a very far-fetched wish. Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Yadler points out here on this Medrash that when Chava ate from the tree of knowledge, she fed the animals as well. She wanted to make quite sure that her husband would eat too, and in case he would refuse to eat directly, she made sure that all the animals ate as well. And therefore the produce of the animals, the eggs and the milk, or according to some, the Adam did eat meat, that through that he would be affected by the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, says Rabbi Yitzchak Zev Yadler, if it weren't for the eating of the Eitz Hadas, animals also would not have died. They would also have had eternity. Death was not only human death was introduced after the eating of the Eitz Hadas. All death was introduced then. And prior to the eating of the Eitz Hadas, there wasn't to be death at all. Not among humans and not among animals. And instinctively, the ant knows that there is a spark of eternity in her too. And that there is theoretically a chance that if humanity will be masak in the chet, if humanity will make good the mistakes, the wrongs that they did, the whole world will be returned to eternal life, and she included. She's instinctively aware of that there's a chance that humanity will do tshuva, and that she'll be blessed with eternal life. And when that occurs, she needs to be prepared. So although it's a far-fetched possibility, it's instinctively within every ant, within every animal, within every barrier. There's that knowledge of the feasibility. She knows that essentially she was meant to live eternally. An interesting observation. I wondered why she has to keep so much food. If she, in 6 months, she uses 1.5 grains, and in that same 6 months she can store enormous quantities. There's 300 kura. It's an unusual case, but enormous quantities she's able to store. Why is she so worried if she's given long life? So So she'll carry on earning her living. She obviously can earn her living much quicker than she can consume it. So it doesn't matter. If she's given long life, she'll also be given the koyach to carry on earning her living. So she'll carry on for a couple of hours a day. She'll go and look for something to eat. What's the problem going to be? Why does she have to store so much? Even if she worries about the possibility of eternal life. One must say, when Mashiach comes, she doesn't want to have to be running around looking for food. She wants to be able to just sit and enjoy the kedusha of the world at that time. She wants her food already. And that's why the parallel from there is, the parallel is not to us, so you also work like crazy in case you get blessed with eternal life so that you'll have something to eat afterwards, which is the normal way of human beings. People seem to work very hard in the belief that they'll have some kind of eternal life. I don't know, it's not that I believe that I'll have eternal life, but I want my children to have security as well. But your children are also able-bodied people. They also go out and work. We ask the same question we ask on the ant. Why does she have to store so much up? If she has long life, she'll go out, she'll carry on working. Human beings, we can ask the same question on. Why does the father work so hard so that the child should have security? The child's also able-bodied. He'll carry on working. Who says he'll stop? See, if the parent will say, because I want my child to sit in yeshiva all day and kollel all day, I never want him to have to work for a living. Good. If that's what the parent has in mind, then one can still understand, but usually it's not like that. The father works his head off and starts pushing the child. He must go to university and he must get himself a degree and he must have training and he must also be able to earn a living. Why must we both kill ourselves? But we are like that. We're funny in that way. We're also ants. But that's not the lesson we're meant to learn from here. The lesson we're meant to learn from here is, and when that future time comes, says the ant, I don't want to have to be earning a living now. I want to be able to sit and be able to enjoy the kedusha of the world at that time. So when it comes to matters of Olam Haba, that's no time to go looking for mitzvahs. When it comes to Olam Haba, the mitzvahs all have to be ready stored up. And so we too, the ant does it on a far-fetched chance that maybe we will have a future. We know we'll have a future. We know that there's an Olam Haba in store for us. So all we have to do is see that we have enough mitzvahs for it. We have to store up. We have to learn from the ant. But there's a much greater question which nobody asks on the Medrash. The question is, how is it possible for an ant to store up so much? How is it possible for an ant to store up, work out the ratio between the 1.5 grains and the 300 kur? And even though Zev Wolf wants to say that the 300 kur is an exaggeration, firstly it's not clear that it is an exaggeration, and secondly, even if it is an exaggeration, 300 kur is an enormous amount. But clear, the Medrash wants to say that she stores enormous amounts, even if it's an exaggeration, but the real amount is also enormous. Work out the ratio between the amount that it needs to eat and the amount that it stores, and translate it into human terms. So let's say that she stores 1,000,000 grains. I don't know how much she stores. Let's say 1,000,000 grains. That means she stores 1,000,000 times, or nearly 1,000,000 times, what she consumes. So figure out what a human being consumes in terms of food, and what strength he would need to have to store away 1,000,000 times his consumption in a lifetime. Or whatever the ratio is, it's unbelievable. And people do wonder at the strength of the ant. When you look at a little ant carrying a particle which is bigger than himself, and people wonder, he scurries along, doesn't slow him down at all, scurries along. How does he do it? That's the real question which we must ask. Where does this little ant get the koyach? It can't live for 6 months. Why not? Says the Medrash, Shemisha Inlo Gidim Vatsonos and Chayon Avad Chodoshim. Because one who doesn't have sinews and bones can't live for more than 6 months. A Bria, a creature that doesn't have a skeletal structure, can't live for more than 6 months, says the Medrash. According to some, it can't survive the climatic changes from summer to winter, whatever it is. So we see she's very weak. The reason she lived only for 6 months is because of how weak she is. If she's so weak, how can she carry such weights? How can she achieve such effort and energy and such results in this short little life of hers? That's the real question. And it's in answer to that question that we find the yesod of the whole Medrash. The answer to that is, she can do it because she's working for her Olam Haba. Because she's working for a purpose that is valuable. Even though it's far-fetched, and even though she knows that there hasn't yet been an ant in history who's lived more than that, and that the chances of her being the first one are very slim, but so important is it to her to be free of work, if that should happen, if the Mashiach should come and she should be blessed with eternal life, so important is it to her to be free and to have her food ready, that she's able to achieve supernatural physical feats. That's the chiddush of the Medrash. And that's why you lazy one has to go to the ant. Because a lazy person doesn't do less than he thinks he's capable of. The tragedy with a lazy person is he really believes that that's all he's capable of. He really believes he's doing the best he can. If he didn't believe that, it would be easy to treat laziness, and yet laziness is one of the hardest things to treat. And the reason it's hard to treat is because the lazy person has so many terutzim, always got an excuse, always got an answer. And he believes he's doing his best, he believes he's trying his hardest. If an ant tried its hardest, maybe it would find 1.5 grains during its lifetime. How did it find so much more than it needs? Because it's trying much more than its hardest. Trying one's hardest is nowhere near enough. Trying one's hardest is enough to achieve normal results. But if one wants to achieve superhuman results, then one has to try a lot more than one's hardest. And it's this optimism of the ant, this belief and knowledge that there's a feasibility of eternal life and that it has a responsibility to strive and to work and to make provision for that eternal life, gives it the koyach to achieve something absolutely amazing, supernatural. If any human being had the power of an ant, imagine what that human being would be. Imagine that if an ant was as big as a person, how terrified we would be of them. They would terrorize us. Imagine what power, what koyach, if you magnify its strength, the number of times that it would need to magnify to the size of a human being. And the Midrash goes on. No, if it's so important for her to gather all this wheat, and she works with such mesiras nefesh to gather all this corn, surely we must expect that on the odd occasion she'll take something which isn't hers also. If what's important is to have a lot, you know, so occasionally a weaker ant drops something, you can also pick it up. It saves you the effort of having to go out and look for it yourself. Surely that's the natural, normal consequence of somebody who's very motivated towards the accumulation of wealth. The answer is yes, that is the normal behavior, the normal conduct of one who's motivated to the accumulation of wealth. But the ant is berachas min hageza. She's not motivated to the accumulation of wealth. She's motivated to the accumulation of her own wealth. If you look in the Pasuk, and Rashi points it out in the Pasuk, Tachin bakayit lachmo, she prepares in the summer her food, lachmo, her food, not lechem. She doesn't prepare food in the summer. Ogro bakotzir ma'acholo, again, her food she prepares in the springtime. It must be mine, says the ant. I'm not interested in putting away somebody else's. I want my own. And therefore gezel she won't touch. Rabbi Shimon bar Chalafa tells the story of the ant that drops the grain and no other ant comes near it. Instinctively they know it's not theirs, it belongs to somebody, they leave it alone until that ant comes back and finds it. The ant works towards a high ideal, an ideal of an eternal life. It has a religion, the ant has a religion. It believes in eternal life as a possibility, as a feasibility, as something towards which to strive. And the ant knows that that eternal life comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that one has to morally deserve that eternal life. It's not something I can do anything. The reason I'm gathering my food is not because that will bring me eternal life. No, God will give me eternal life, maybe. I've just got to see that I'm ready for it if the Ribbono Shel Olam gives it to me. But if I don't live morally, there's no way I'm going to get that eternal life. And so the ant, through the most unbelievable moral and religious dedication, is able to gather resources and to accumulate energy, which places it in one of the most industrial, if not the most industrial categories of any Bria, of any creature. That there is nobody in relationship to its own size that is able, that is as productive, as industrious, as this little ant. And what gives it to her strength? No, she only lives for 6 months because she's not strong. So what gives her the koyach? Here we have the chiddush. Physical strength is the product of moral dedication, not the product of gymnastics. There's nobody less gymnastic than the ant. There's nobody less muscular than the ant. Lama, why does she only live 6 months? Shemi she'in lo gidim va'atzomos ein l'chaya levav chodosh. Because somebody Nebuch who has no muscles and no bones can't live for more than 6 months. Imagine the ant will come into into a gym and say he wants some muscle building exercises. Well, they'll laugh at him. You don't have any muscles, muscle building. You can build muscles. If you've got muscles, go out. You don't stand a chance. Pick up weights, you won't be able to pick up weights. And he says, but 1 second, you don't realize, I'm an ant, have you seen me pick up? Oh, they'll say, pick up food, that you know how to pick up, but not weights. Because you don't see any moral purpose in picking up weights. Picking up food, that you're doing for the reason, that you're doing for the purpose. Here you've got the principle of mind over matter, but not just ordinary mind over matter. Man's moral consciousness over matter. Man's moral dedication over matter, not just an ordinary mind. He's working for an Olam Habo, he's working for the Ribono Shel Olam. And that's why he won't be over the Isra of Gezel, that's why he won't touch anything which is not mine. I'm not just working for the accumulation of wealth. I'm working for my own well-earned wealth. I want it to be mine, that's what I want. I don't want any free rides. I don't want anything for nothing. I don't want anything which I haven't worked for. I want it all to be my own. And with that knowledge that Gezel is forbidden, that theft is forbidden, that that's not his, and that he's got to work and work and work, the ant proceeds with his life and is able to achieve these amazing feats. This pshat in the Medrash is my own, but the concept is a concept which Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to talk about and used to explain many chazals. There's an amazing Medrash at the end of Parashat Kafvov in Parshas Emor, where the Medrash says, "Lama mikro shemoi kohen gadol." Why do we call him a kohen gadol, the great kohen, the big kohen? Well, gadol. Call him the chief kohen. Why the big kohen? What's big about it? Answers the Medrash: "Who gadol behei dvorim?" Because he is great in five things. The chokhmah, he's great in wisdom. B'koyach, in strength. B'noi, in appearance. B'osher, in wealth. U'v'shonim, and in age. Those are qualifications a Kohen Gadol must have. B'noi, what does it mean in beauty? Shehayon no'e me'echov. He was more handsome than his colleagues. B'koyach, what does it mean that he was very strong? Shehu gibor. He was strong. He was a giver. Borei, come and see. Aaron, k'shehinif es halavim, kafbeis elef, hinif b'yom echad. When Aaron introduced the Levim to the Avodah, and he had to do a wave offering with each one of them, he introduced on one day 22,000 Levim. Ketzad ayom enifam, how did he do it? He used to have to take their korban, and moilich, he had to move it. Molech, Umevi, Male, Umevi. Those four movements there. To push it forward, bring it up, down. Avishai, your God will be cursed. You see how great he was in strength. You try and do that 22,000 times. And this was Aaron HaKohen. This wasn't an Olympic gymnastic. This was Aaron HaKohen. He'd been sitting learning Torah all his life. 22,000 times, all the way. You try. Try and see how far you get. Take the fittest of you and try it. You won't be able to get very far. And still holding a korban, even without a korban try. And apart from anything else, work out the amount of time it takes. And you'll find that it's virtually impossible to fit 22,000 into a day. It's almost impossible. That means he didn't stop for a second. Not for a second did he stop. Certainly there was no time for food or for rest. He must have gone on, if you work it out, that it takes 2 or 3 seconds to do it, at least 3 seconds. I work out that in 12 hours he could do 20,000. At 3 seconds each, without a stop. 12 hours, he can do 20,000. So what does it mean? Sorry? 12 hours, 14,000. Are you sure? At 3 seconds each. At 3 seconds of time, we'll start at 1,200 an hour. So he's going to have to do it in a lot less than 3 seconds. So he's going to have to do it in a lot less than 3 seconds. Sorry, my calculations were wrong. The Shabbos, I couldn't use a calculator. And yet, is that important to a Kohen? Must he be such a muscle man? Is that what we need of a Kohen Gadol? What the Medrash means, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz explains this Medrash. What he did is humanly impossible. It's not possible for a man, no matter how strong, to do 22,000 Hanofas in one day. Not possible. So how did he do it? Where did he get superhuman Koach from? His moral dedication. He knew it had to be done, and he was totally dedicated to the mitzvah, to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he was able to master superhuman Koach, superhuman physical strength, to be able to achieve that which normal people can't achieve. By doing exercises, one can get stronger, and one can get oneself more fit. But there comes a limit, and that limit is set by the human being, not by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The human being's body is structured in such a way that he can't do better than that. When a person uses his moral koach, the limits that are set by the Ribbono Shel Olam, not the human body, it's possible to break all records and to go far beyond that which the human body would normally allow. If one's motivation is not physical, but one's motivation is spiritual and is moral. 2 weeks ago we had the shiur on the importance of superhuman morality in order to teach Jewish morality in the world. Well, it is the story with the donkey and the diamond that was found in him, you'll remember. Things that psychologists can't explain. That's how a Yid has to behave himself in order to bring about an awareness of what the Torah is. In order to achieve this superhuman physical strength, it's a strength which no doctor would be able to explain. No scientist would be able to explain how a man, never mind of Aaron's age, even a younger man, Aaron was already an old man when he did this, even a younger man would be able to do such a thing. It's beyond the explanation of a scientist. The answer is there is no scientific explanation for this. For this there is only a religious explanation, but it is possible for the human being to achieve superhuman physical strength through dedication of mind and spirit to the Ribbono Shel Olam. One sees it again in the Gemara Nedarim, Daf Lamed Ches. The Gemara says, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashre Shechinosoi Elo Al Giboy V'Oshir V'Chochom. The Ribbono Shel Olam only allows his Shechina to rest on one who is a Giboy, who is strong, Oshir wealthy, and Chochom wise, the honored and modest with it all. The Kulan Mimoshin, we learn this all from Moshe. Where does the Gemara learn Giboy, that he was strong? Because it says, Va'etpois Bishnei Haluchos, Va'ashlichem Me'al Shtei Yodai Va'ashabrein. And I took hold of the two tablets, and I threw them on the ground, and I threw them from my two hands, and I shattered them. These tablets, one has to appreciate what the dimensions of the tablets were. The Tanya, we learned in the Braisa. Haluchos, these Luchos, Orkan Shisho, their height was six Tfochim, they weren't very big. The Rochban Shisha, and their width was six, so they were square, and their thickness, the Ovyan Shloisha, and their thickness was three Tfochim. These were blocks of stone, they weren't thin tablets. These were heavy blocks of stone, almost square. Three Tfochim is about 10 inches. You know, 12 inches, about a foot thick, of stone, of solid stone. And he took them and he threw them down and was able to smash them. So we see the koach of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now the Rambam, when he brings this Gemara in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah Perek Zayin, he says, "Mi Yesodei Hadas," it is one of the principles of the religion, "Leidor to know Shehakel Menabe Is Bnei Ha'odom," that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives prophecy to human beings. However, Ve'ein HaNevuah Chalo Elo HaChochom Godol B'Chochmo. The Nevuah prophecy only falls on a man who is a wise man who is great in wisdom, and Gibor, powerful, then Midosov in his character. The Loyeh Yitzroi Mizgaber Olav, and his Yitzroi never gets the better of him, Bedova Bo'elam, and anything in the world. Elohu Mizgaber Bedato Al Yitzroi. But he uses his intellect to overpower his Yitzroi, Tomid always. Where does the Rambam get this from? The same Gemara, that Nevuah only falls on a Gibor, And how does the Rambam interpret Gibur? The same as in Pirkei Avos. Ezer Gibur HaKodesh is Yitzro. Who is that? Strong man? One who can overcome his Yetzer. One who can overpower his own passions with his mind. That's a Gibur. But how can you learn that from Moshe Rabbeinu? The proof that Moshe was a Gibur is that he could shatter a piece of stone that was 6 by 6 by 3. What's that got to do with Kodesh is Yitzro? The answer is to shatter that stone was superhuman. For a man, never mind of his age, but even for a younger man, to shatter those stones is something that a human being can't do. So he did it superhumanly. How did he do it? Because of his ability that Elohim is Gaber Bedaato Al Yitzro Tomid. A man who is always able to overpower his Yetzer with his mind is a man who can achieve anything. There is nothing that stands before a man who can give him his Gaber B'Yitzro. Once one has developed the power to smash one's own Yetzer, there's nothing stronger than that. To smash one's own tendencies, one's desires, one's cravings, one's passions, one's weaknesses. To shatter that, there's nothing harder than that. And when a human being has the single-mindedness and the dedication and the moral commitment to shatter his own Yetzer, there's nothing in the world he can't shatter. That's the principle of Jewish karate. It wasn't created in the Far East. We have our own. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one who, with the power of his mind, was able to shatter a piece of stone which no human being would normally be able to shatter. The power of his mind. And so it is, we've got also with Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov is running away from Esav, you'll remember, and he comes to a well and he sees the shepherds are hanging around there. And he says to them, the day is still young, it's not time yet to gather the sheep in. Why are you standing around here wasting time? Give the flock water and then go and feed them. Don't waste your balabos's time. And they said, we cannot, until all the flock have come together. Then they can all roll the stone off the mouth of the well. And we can feed the flock, and we can give water to the flock. Says Rashi, we can't give water to the flock because the stone is too big. We need all the shepherds together to roll it off. Then in the Daber Imam, while he was still speaking with them, the Rochel boy, Matzoin Ashil Avia, and Rochel came with her father's flock, Ki Roy Ohi, for she was a shepherdess. When Yaakov saw Rochel and the flock, Vayigash Yaakov drew up, Vayogel Esoeven Alpia Be'er, and he pushed away the stone off the mouth of the well, Vayashkis Tzoin Lovan Achimoy, and he fed the flock of Lovan, his father, the brother of his mother. Says Rashi, Vayigash Yaakov Vayagel, and Yaakov drew up and he rolled off the stone, Kemishi Marvius Apkak Me'alpitsa Luchis, like somebody removing the cork off a bottle. There's nothing for him. To tell you how strong Yaakov was. What does it interest us how strong he was? Why is there this emphasis all along? We see the koyach, the brute force, the muscular strength of all these gedolei Yisrael. What does it interest us? We're interested in their minds, not in their bodies. The answer is there's no way he could have done it if it weren't for great intellect. There was no way he could have done it if he wasn't a person who is able to be kovishes Yitzrei Tomid, if he wasn't able to smash his own passions whenever he wanted to as well. That's what gave him the power to be able to remove the rock. Here again we see the principle that the physical strength, that the superhuman physical strength can be achieved not through further exercises. There's a limit to how strong you can get to exercising. But superhuman physical strength can be achieved through commitment and through moral commitment, through a dedication to the Ribbono Shel Olam and to the Torah, to see a purpose in what one's doing, a purpose which is in itself superhuman, and one is able to then draw on koiches, on energies which one didn't know that one possessed. That's what we're taught in the Medrash, that the Otzel has to learn. We pointed out in the beginning that there's a piece of knowledge that the Otzel is missing. The piece of knowledge that the Otzel is missing is a very simple thing that parents teach their children very young, but they forget to reinforce it through their lives. There's no such thing as I can't. That's what an otzel has to learn. There's no such thing as I can't. If you're committed to it, you can, if you need to. If it's right, if it's true, if it needs to be done, you can do it. There's nothing you can't do. You don't have the strength to do it, get the strength to do it. I'm weak, there's no one weaker than an ant. There's no excuse at all, that's what you've got to learn from the ant. The ant teaches us that there is nothing which the human being can't achieve. With his body, we're talking physiologically, we're not talking about great spiritual achievement. That's something else. We're talking even about physical achievement. There is nothing which he cannot achieve if he's committed to it and if he's dedicated to it. And the ant does it without shifting the shifting. There's no external compulsive force that motivates the ant. The ant isn't forced to realize the severity of consequences. We have shifting the shifting. In our Derech Drush, not only do we have legal judges and policemen, but shifting the shifting titen lecho in the singular. Shifting the shifting you must apply to yourselves. We have inborn judges and policemen. We have conscience. We have knowledge. We know what's right and wrong. We have Musar, which can teach us the consequences of right and wrong. We can understand, we can appreciate the consequences of doing wrong. We don't need policemen. The ant hasn't got that conscience. The ant doesn't realize what Olam Haba is and what the consequences of not getting there are. He doesn't have that. We do have that. How much more so do we have to be thus motivated to do that which is right and to do that which we thought we couldn't? It's perhaps the greatest tragedy of life that we tend to underestimate ourselves. And we underestimate ourselves because of laziness. We like to underestimate ourselves because that excuses us from great effort. It's only worthwhile to pursue something with great effort if one believes there's a chance of success. But if one believes that one's incapable of it, that's one's terrace, that's one's answer already, why one doesn't have to put in that great effort. That we need to know is not so. There is nothing at all that is morally correct. They're not working with Torah, they're not working with the superhuman, they're working with the human. We're talking about the ability to achieve in a superhuman sense, to achieve far beyond what one would normally expect the body to be able to achieve. It's true that one needs a certain amount of sleep every night. Can one manage with less? Depends how committed one is to what one's doing. True that one needs a certain amount of relaxation and a certain amount of food every day. Can one manage with less? Depends how committed one is to what one's doing. It's true that one needs great concentration to be able to achieve in one's learning, for example, in one's studies. Is that concentration possible? Depends how committed one is to what one's going to achieve. And as long as one sees theft as an option, there's no way we're going to put in effort. The moment you think a free ride is a possibility, the moment you think you can ride on somebody else's hard work, forget about it. You're going to be an otzel for the rest of your life. What drives the ant is because she knows it's got to be my food. I won't settle for somebody else's. I'm not interested in storing somebody else's food. It's got to be mine. And once you know that there are no free rides and that you're going to have to do it yourself and nobody in the world can do it for you, then one can start getting oneself off one's seat and one can start moving and one can start exerting superhuman effort. If one understands the importance and one understands that there is no option, then one puts in the effort. And the results far exceed the effort that one puts in. Would any scientist be able to explain the relationship between an ant's efforts and an ant's results? It's unbelievable. It isn't to be explained. If that can be with the ant, it can be with the human being too. That's why the Ribbono Shel Olam made an ant to show you what can be done. As long as you'll ban Gezel, as long as you'll know there are no free rides, and you'll be committed to what you're doing, the measure of reward to effort can be exactly the same as the ant. The work, the little bit, the meager little effort that she can put in because of her weak little body, and the enormous results she can achieve, is something which is open to every human being. It's something which can be achieved on the most physical of levels. There is no greater tragedy, in my opinion, than laziness. There is no greater tragedy than this humility, this false humility that we view ourselves with. It is, I could never do that. Wonderful, but I couldn't do it. What do you mean I couldn't do it? Why couldn't I do it? I couldn't do it because I don't want to do it. It's too hard. That's what I'm really saying. It's very nice, but it's too hard for me. That's what it is. Too hard for you? Okay, you won't do it. But if we would know that whatever we choose, if it's right and if we're committed to it, and if we're committed to the concept of Le Sigzo, if we're committed to the concept that there are no free rides, you can't take somebody else's, if you want it, you're going to have to go and get it yourself, there's nothing which is beyond us. And with the help of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we will find that our achievements, if we follow this, both in Ruchnis and in Gashmis, in matters of the spirit and in material matters, will exceed our wildest expectations, and we shall be blessed with Siyata Dishmaya.